In a few minutes, high school basketball through a wealth and poverty frame. I'm David Brancaccio. Fewer people signed up for unemployment benefits in the last week. 712,000 new applications is still a lot of filings, but down 5.6% from a week earlier and the lowest since November. But as you know, November was still a somber time. On Thursdays, we have a standing calendar date with Diane Swonk, the noted analyst and the chief economist at Grant Thornton. Morning.
Good morning.
These are aggregate for the whole country, but where are the improvements being seen if you think about states?
We saw the biggest improvements accounting for almost all of the gains in three states. Texas, which had been a big surge the previous week as they caught up from those electricity outages and what happened as the state went down on electricity grid the week prior. We also saw a big reduction in Minnesota and New York. And so there is some good news out there. They're pretty stable when you include the special pandemic insurance claims with it at 1.2 million. And they're still above the worst week that we saw during the Great Recession, but at least we're not getting worse. And I think that's important. I think we're going to see a spurt in hiring this spring.
Still just under 10 million people not working who were before this pandemic. Stimulus is on the way. Is it coming a little late? Is this recovery already happening in front of us?
The key issue is what we've learned time and time again is every time we've seen a big improvement in employment, which I do think is in the cards, we then lose momentum. At the pace of employment gains we saw in February, which was an upside surprise, it would still take 25 months to recoup the losses that we lost to COVID, let alone what could have been over 2 million jobs a year we were generating prior to the crisis. And so that's why it's so important that we have stimulus to sustain and also provide a cushion, even if we lose momentum with the variants in the virus that we're already seeing out there.
Diane Swonk at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton, chief economist there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Come Friday, the $1.9 trillion relief package will have become law. We continue to look at many angles. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra now on the $126 billion for K-12 schools.
Some of the money would go towards school reopenings. Ventilation systems, PPE, cleaning supplies, training on how to keep students safe. It could also be used for programs during school closures, like meals for students and technology for online learning, and for mental health services for students. And some money is set aside to help students catch up after a year of online classes, summer school, after school programs, that sort of thing. Also, the bill says that within 30 days of receiving funds, school districts will have to come up with a public plan for safely returning to in-person classes. And again, this is all for K-12 schools. There's also about $40 billion in there for colleges and universities. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
We're also following today how the bill temporarily subsidizes COBRA payments to keep health coverage after a job ends. McKinsey research out today finds that only about 6% of writers, directors, and producers who work on films made in the U.S. are black, about where it's been for 15 years. It also finds that movies with black professionals in off-screen roles get less funding, marketing, and distribution. Here's Marketplace's Samantha Fields.
There is more demand than ever for movies and TV shows with diverse casts. But Sheldon Lin at McKinsey says films led by black producers, writers, or directors get 40% less funding than other films. Even though, he says, per dollar spent,
films with black leads generated 10% more in returns at the box office.
By addressing racial inequities, McKinsey estimates the industry could bring in another $10 billion a year.
What we can say concretely is that with increased diversity, we will have better economics for the industry.
Franklin Leonard is a film and TV producer and CEO of The Blacklist. He says if the industry recognizes racial equity is the right thing to do, morally and financially,
we should be hiring and promoting based on people's ability to hire and promote inclusively.
Films with at least one black senior producer or executive, McKinsey found, are much more likely to have black people in other off-screen roles, too, as writers, producers, and directors. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
This year, I'm inviting you to watch one documentary a month along with me as part of Econ Extra Credit. In this March of Madness, I'm taking a new look at the legendary high school basketball doc from 1994, you know, Hoop Dreams, two high school basketball players from Chicago from struggling families. So many challenges, like the $1,800 debt to a Catholic high school that keeps haunting a player. I spoke to the film's director, Steve James.
When we started to make the film, you know, I think we saw it as a film about the dream of basketball that is so prevalent in communities of color, and particularly besieged communities, and particularly among Black youth and their families. I think what emerged for us is that the basketball dream, in many respects, was kind of a metaphor for the elusiveness of the American dream for so many families like Arthur and Williams.
Part of that is this idea of social mobility, right? There are those who say that in America, if you have some talent and you just buckle down, good things happen. I mean, you watch the film, maybe they can, but life puts hurdles in people's way. I mean, it's dramatic.
Yeah, and you know, there's a common belief, I think, among, you know, let's just say, particularly among white people, to look at inspiring stories of Black people who have come from nothing and made something in their lives and go, see, anybody can do that in America. And the lie of that is that in those situations, it often takes someone of extraordinary talent to do that. And most of us, you know, myself included, we're not extraordinary, you know? And so if we were faced with the same obstacles, very few of us would make it in that way. So those inspiring stories can sometimes hide the fact that for the great majority of people in these communities, the hurdles are so huge that it makes it hard to succeed.
I mean, you know, I mean, you look at that story, neither plays for the NBA, but they get through college, right? I mean, that is something given what they faced in each of those families.
Yeah, you know, another thing that there's this common belief about is that people look at kids like Arthur and William and think, you know, they have this dream of making it to pros, and that's such a far-fetched dream. So few players will ever get there, and that's absolutely true. And I think a lot of times we shake our heads and go, why would they be so naive to think that they're going to make it to the pros when it's such a long shot? And these kids and their families aren't as naive as all that. They, you know, they look around and they see that there are other opportunities that come with their pursuit of this sport, be it get to college, get a scholarship or a partial scholarship, or even to be inspired to go to a non-scholarship situation and just play ball but get an education. Mm.
Steve James is the director of Hoop Dreams. His most recent project is the 5-part docuseries City So Real about Chicago's 2019 mayoral election that he did for National Geographic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you like, start getting our Econ Extra Credit newsletter every week at marketplace.org/newsletters. And watch the film and send me your reaction to its business of sports and wealth and poverty themes. Email morningreport@marketplace.org. I also talked today to one of the stars of Hoop Dreams, William Gates. He coaches for the Amateur Athletic Union now and is a pastor in Texas. It's in our podcast if you miss it on the air. I'm David Brancaccio with our Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.